We are pleased to be joined now by Adam Reuther, criminal defense partner for Rosenberg, Martin, and Greenberg, and a former assistant state's attorney for Baltimore City. Great to have you on. We appreciate you coming on the show, as always.
Always happy to be on. Thanks so much for having me.
So, you know, we've heard the emotional and the eyewitnesses who were there, including an off-duty firefighter who was there and wanted to help and was pushed aside by fellow police officers, people who witnessed and rolled camera on this yesterday. I'm curious as to why the prosecution decided to do this first and what type of impact, because look, it's the art of getting a conviction right, of what impact this might have on the jury.
So there are a lot of ways, obviously, that you can present the kind of evidence that the state has in a case like this. Some think that it's best to do a timeline and to present the evidence in sort of a storyboard the way you would with a movie. But, you know, if we look at movies, there are lots of ways that you can tell a story not using a chronological timeline. You know, we know that the way that people, including jurors, learn is through the ideas of primacy and recency. You know, what happened? What did I hear first and what did I hear most recently and before I had to make my decision? And so sometimes prosecutors like to start with really impactful evidence at the beginning of their case, even if it's not necessarily the first thing that comes in time of the overall continuum of the facts. So there are lots of very valid theories about how you start a case, and starting off with something that really hits the jurors with something emotional is certainly a valid strategy.
He's a partner with Rosenberg, Martin, and Greenberg, and he used to be in Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office as an assistant attorney. Adam Reuther's on board with us. I want to talk about the charges with you for a second, Adam, and that being second-degree murder, a manslaughter charges against him, and a third charge that was fought back and forth and is being appealed, third-degree murder. Now, according to the state of Minnesota, Adam, the third-degree murder is when a defendant kills someone by perpetrating an act imminently dangerous to others and evidencing a depraved mind. Is that similar to what we went through here in Baltimore with the depraved mind murder charge with the six officers with Freddie Gray?
Now, you're absolutely right, C4. That is the Minnesota analog to what in Maryland we call depraved heart murder, and it's a doctrine that's been around for as long as the law of murder has been. And essentially, what it says, both in Maryland and in Minnesota, is if you do something that is so far outside of the norms of human behavior that we accept in our society, where you see a danger, anybody would see a danger under that circumstance, and you completely disregard it, that you act with a depraved heart, that's why we call it that, then even if you didn't actually intend to kill anybody, the law holds you as responsible as someone who made a conscious decision to kill. The classic example they teach you in law school of this is playing Russian roulette with another person, where you take one bullet and you put it in a six-chambered gun and you spin the cylinder and put it to someone's head and pull the trigger. That's a classic sort of hypothetical example. Unfortunately, it's not completely hypothetical. It's happened in the law. But that's a great illustration of the kind of mental state that the law is looking for in order to impute the intent to kill, even though it isn't actually there in the person's mind.
You know, the defense talked about the martial arts experience, talked about being combative, talked about other things. Does that make a difference when you have videotape of, you know, someone who is, you know, on the ground and can't do anything? I mean, I feel like the videotape aspect of this changes everything from the defense point of view and from a prosecutor's point of view as well. I'm curious to get your thoughts on that.
There is no doubt that trying a case where you have videotape evidence of the moment-by-moment unfolding of the facts versus trying a case the way it used to be tried before there was so much accessibility to videotape and body-worn camera and whatnot, it's a very, very different animal. There's no doubt about it. Rather than having a lot of factual argument as to what happened moment by moment, trying a case like this is so much more about arguing things like causation and mental state, which is the reason that you see this spectrum of charges against former officer Chauvin, because the defense is going to argue it wasn't this level of mental state. It wasn't depraved heart murder. In fact, even if you find the causation element, if the officer had something less than that disregard, that depraved heart mental state, and therefore maybe it should be manslaughter even if you find causation. But the video is going to be something that the jury is going to look at very carefully. And because, as with most cases, the defendant isn't standing there declaring to everybody what his mental state is. He's not standing there saying, I see that he's not breathing and I don't care. Although, you know, you could look at the information he's being given by the other people passing by and infer that. That's exactly what the jury is going to have to do. The jury is going to have to look at all the video evidence and the testimony of the other witnesses who were talking to those officers, and they are going to have to make inferences about what was in the mind of that police officer in that moment and whether it rises to the level of depraved heart or whether it is simply an unreasonable risk and the officer takes that risk with knowing that the chance of death is possible, which would put him in the manslaughter category.
Attorney Adam Reuther, when it comes to the Hennepin County, that's what Minneapolis is in, a prosecutor's office, they also are going after the three officers who did not intervene with former three officers, didn't intervene with former Officer Chauvin. I noticed in the letter of testimony from the person who was an MMA guy to the woman who's an EMT, she was off that day, they mentioned this Officer Tao over and over again, one of the police officers who wouldn't intervene. Do you see them using a lot of these same witnesses against him as well when it comes up, Adam?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. So the way the other officers will likely be tried will be as aiders and abettors to the crime that they are currently trying Officer Chauvin for. And in order to be an aider and abettor, you have to be present and you have to do something to assist in the success of the crime of the principal, the person actually committing the crime. So, you know, the classic example of this is in a bank robbery. If I'm sitting outside, I never even go in the bank, but I'm in a car that's running, waiting for my accomplices to come out so they can get in and I can drive them. I'm a getaway driver. That's a classic example of being an aider and abettor. I didn't actually participate in the crime itself, but there's no doubt that I assisted in the crime. And that's the theory that they're going to put on. And in order to get there, you have to obviously establish all the elements of the underlying crime. That's the reason that they try Officer Chauvin first. If they get a conviction that they're happy with him, it's going to be a lot easier to then sort of port that over into the trial of the officers they're going to charge and try as aider and abettors.
Is it common for the defense not to even cross-examine a witness? Because that happened yesterday a time or two. I know it happened at least once. But
with a 10-year-old little girl. With a 10-year-old little girl, yeah.
Particularly with witnesses like children, witnesses who have experienced significant trauma. It's an important thing for the defense to take into consideration the optics of cross-examination. Yeah. Because if there really isn't much that you're going to be able to accomplish in terms of making evidentiary points that you're then going to be able to argue in closing argument that will be impactful in your jury's decision, simply beating up, for lack of a better word, on a witness who's otherwise very sympathetic to a jury, like a child or someone who's experienced trauma, really just paints you as a bad guy in the eyes of the jury, and therefore that translates to your client when you're defending somebody. So it's not always a good decision to cross-examine simply for the sake of doing it. You always want to pick your battles when you're dealing with a situation like that.
Attorney Adam Reuther, we look forward to leaning on your expertise when we can. It's going to be a month of we're hearing of this trial. He is a partner with Rosenberg, Martin, and Greenberg, former member of the state's attorney's office as an assistant. Thank you, Attorney Reuther. Appreciate
it. Great to have you on.